Get a jump start on 2024 in a new Kia from Robert Brogdon's Olathe Kia. Shop their large selection, including the new Sorento, Niro, and Soul models. You'll score big with low prices, trade assist cash, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit OlatheKia.com.
Sports Radio 810 WHB, the Interurban Lofts proudly present The Border Patrol with Stephen St. John and Nate Buchady.
Good morning, my neighbors!
It's showtime!
Hunter swings and drops one into right field. That's a base hit. In comes Benintendi. Here comes Bobby Witt. He will score, and it's 2-0 Royals.
Back to the middle. And Benintendi is going to drive in one at least. Merrifield stumbled as he approached third, but the throw goes into second base. And Benintendi drives in two more, and the Royals lead 4-0 in the second inning.
And Altuve slowly hit towards the left side. That's going to be tough, and Altuve safe. Astros score a run. Infield hit makes it 5-2.
Maton with the pitch, MJ with the swing, and he blasts this one high and deep to right. That's a way back, and it is gone. Home run number 2 for MJ Melendez, and that is a huge insurance run for the Royals as they now take a 6-3 lead.
Little punch out into center field. That's down for a hit. 2 RBI single. It's a one-run game. Towards the middle. That's going to go through for a hit. Around third comes Alex Bregman. He's going to score. Astros have tied it at 6. Yordan drives one. Deep right field. An explosion off his bat. Sets off the 4th of July celebration. Astros' biggest come-from-behind victory of the season. They win it 7-6. Back-to-back days with a walk-off home run.
Good morning, Kansas City. Welcome to the Border Patrol for this Tuesday, July 5th, 2022. My name is Nate Buchady. Marco Marquez is running the show this morning. Good morning, Marco. How are you?
Good morning, Nate. Doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing fine. And we've got the intern Marissa in here helping keep us on task today as well. Fresh off the heels of a extended holiday weekend. And Stephen St. John has one more day left of his vacation, so he is at home, no doubt, undertaking all sorts of crafts and hobbies and other things as he finishes up this vacation, and then the rest of the week, Stephen will be on location. He is headed to Lake Tahoe for the American Century Golf Championship. That, of course, we always cover here on Sports Radio 810 WHB from wall to wall with all sorts of famous celebrities and athletes competing in one of the most beautiful settings for golf you will find. And we'll have all sorts of interviews and with some Chiefs players that are participating as well. So Steven's going to be on location the rest of the week. So you'll get to, if you're watching on 38 Spot, you got to look at my ugly face again every morning this week. So I apologize for that. Nothing we could do about that. You have a good holiday weekend, Marco.
Yeah, it went pretty well. Trying to remember everything that exactly went on and everything.
It was a long weekend, so you might have done a lot of stuff.
It was. We did not the fireworks show that I told you about at Bishop Miege. Instead, we went down to Kansas Avenue.
Okay.
Where my brother Tony knew somebody who had owned a firehouse down there off of 12th and Osage, maybe.
Okay.
Over there. And converted it into a home. And he had put on a light show / fireworks show. So we had done that Sunday night. That's the long weekend really gets you. Sunday night, of course. And then last night was over all day at family and friends. Spent 8 or 9 hours outside by the pool, lighting a little bit of fireworks here and there, eating some good food. I was in bed by 9:30 though.
Yeah.
Asleep. Ready.
Yeah. It was kind of an exhausting day if you were outside in the sun yesterday by the pool, because it was hot. It was a hot one yesterday, that's for sure.
Did you get to enjoy morning golf on Saturday?
No, the rain. Well, here's what we did actually. Yes, I'm not answering this very well. If you listened to the show last week, we talked about we were supposed to take my dad golfing at Dubs Dread, his old stomping grounds where he used to live and played a ton of golf. And we were working with Gary Lezak on whether or not that was going to be a possibility because there was rain in the forecast Friday night and Saturday morning. We were going to take my dad because his birthday was on Father's Day this year, and we missed it all because I was out of town calling a game for Fox, Marco. I don't know if you know I did that. That was on Father's Day. So we had my sister, my nephews, my kids, and I were all going to take him golfing. And we had to cancel the morning of because there was so much rain coming down. So what we did was we went to Top Golf. And that was really fun. We had a great time. We played for a couple hours. And all the kids could play at all the different ages and all that stuff. And we had a great time with Papa. So that worked out. And it was actually because of the rain, and you know, at Top Golf, you're undercover, but you're outside.
Yeah.
And so the weather was perfect. Like, it was nice and cool on Saturday, and we played some golf and enjoyed the wonderful weather, and that was great. And then my wife and I went to Kenny Chesney on Saturday night, and that was awesome. I'm not a big country music guy. That doesn't mean I don't appreciate it. It's not what I tend to listen to, but my wife loves it. So I knew it was going to be fun because she was going to have a great time. And I'd been to Chesney once before, and it's just like, I don't see how you can have a bad time at his concert because all his songs are just so, they're such feel good songs. I think I must've heard 17 different people say he's the modern day Jimmy Buffett.
Really?
You know, that he's just, cause everything on the video board's about him out on a boat somewhere and, you know, in a beautiful tropical locale and, you know, No Shoes Nation, I think was the name of the tour, you know, like, hey, it's like that whole Jimmy Buffett thing, being in some flip flops and being on the beach somewhere and drinking your cares away, so to speak. So everybody's in a good mood. Everybody's singing along, and that was really fun. The weather was great that night, too. Like, it was nice and cool out. It wasn't bad. So we had a wonderful time there. Sunday, did the Sporting Kansas City game. That sucked, honestly. It's just been a tough year for Sporting Kansas City. They played better than the Red Bulls most of the game. And then there was, of course, a long lightning delay in the first half, so we filled a lot of time on the air until the game was able to resume. It resumed. Sporting did all kinds of good things, but they just can't score, man. They cannot score. They just don't have the guys that can put the ball in the back of the net right now. So they can play good soccer all over the field, but then nothing comes from it, and then the other team creates one chance and they score. And then they sit back and they just say, yeah, go ahead and try to score, Sporting, because you can't break it. You couldn't break us down before we were bunkered in. You're certainly not going to break us down now. And even when the Red Bulls went down a man, they got a red card in the game. They went down a man. Sporting still couldn't come up with anything, any way to punish them. And so it was a devastating loss, their third straight loss at home They're in bad shape right now. It's going to take something really, really, really special to get them back into a position for the playoffs. That might just not be in the cards this year. I guess we'll see. But so that was a frustrating one. That was a tough way to go on Sunday night. I will say this, despite the struggles for Sporting KC this year, the crowd was amazing. I mean, it was still I don't know if it was technically a sellout or not, but the place was full, and the fans were singing and cheering the whole time. Probably this was helped by the fact that there were going to be fireworks that night, but even after the long weather delay, the place was mostly full. Like, most people didn't leave. A lot of them might have been like, hey, look, we're staying for fireworks. That's why, you know, that's one of the reasons we came. We're staying for the fireworks. So anyways, but the crowd stayed, and I will give them that. The fans are still supporting that team, you know, and out there cheering, and it was a great crowd, but they didn't get much to cheer for in that game. And then, of course, yesterday, 4th of July, spent a ton of time at the pool, did all that stuff. I was like you. I was in bed before the fireworks. My wife and two older kids stayed out to watch the fireworks. I was like, I'll go ahead and take the two-year-old home. I'm like him. I'm tired. I'm ready to go to sleep. And so that's what we did. And then, of course, I will admit, I was at the pool yesterday. I was not watching every pitch of the Royals game. At some point during the afternoon, I got on social media and saw post after post after post after post after post about the way the Royals blew that game in Houston. You just heard the highlights to start the show. And what can we say? I mean, it's happened a couple times this year, and I feel like it's happened like at the end of a weekend series where the Royals look like they've got a big win. They've got a big lead that looks like they're going to be in great shape, and they blow it. And that's what they did yesterday. They got a really good start from John Heasley. He went six innings, gave up just one earned run. But the bullpen went on to give up five more runs. And Heasley did give up two runs total, one earned. And it's that same old thing. Royals just keep walking, guys. They just keep walking, guys. They had six walks in the game. The bullpen that came in, Mills and Garrett, both walked two apiece. And then Scott Barlow gives up the walk-off home run at the end of the game. And the Royals lose. So, unfortunately, that's just, we've talked about it, honestly, the vast majority of the time, it's really not that exciting. The Royals just lose. You know, they're 20 games under 500 still, 29 and 49. They just usually just lose. It's nothing that thrilling. But they have had a few times this year where they've had big leads and blown it in heartbreaking fashion like this. And obviously, these are the harder ones to take. But at the same time, I didn't see a ton of outrage on social media about the Royals blowing this game. I saw more sarcastic, well, they're the Royals, you know, there go the Royals again. Well, Royals blew one. What else is new? Like, it just kind of, like, everybody's just kind of like, yeah, well, what do you expect? And, you know, it's the Royals. That's what they do this year. Unfortunately, that's kind of where the Royals are at right now, is you don't even see that much outrage when the team blows a game like this, because it just kind of, they're not in anything. I mean, they're not playing for anything. You're just playing to watch young players develop. You know, you got the positive of a couple of home runs by Melendez, and that's good to see, because he's been struggling offensively here after having a pretty good start to his major league career. He'd been struggling a little bit. Another really good day for Benintendi. You just got to wonder how many more days it is until they trade him. He's back up to a .314 batting average. He had three hits and two RBIs yesterday. So you got your little positives here and there. Heasley, of course, with a good start. He lowers the ZRA to 4.76, which is not great, but it was a good start yesterday. So there are some positives, and I guess you just try to hold on to those. But overall, the Royals, they're playing out string. And there's these little individual things that you watch for. And their inability to avoid the free pass, to me, continues to be maybe the most frustrating part of watching the Royals play in 2022. Coming up on the show, we will have Jamie Bloom in studio. He's going to bring a special guest with him as well. More on that in a little bit. So we'll have Bloom in to talk Royals baseball for the 7 o'clock hour and some other things. Gary Lezak will give us a very hot weather forecast. If he's ready for some heat, then he's going to be a happy guy. And we'll have Andy Rogers at 8:30. We'll also play some sound for you as we continue to monitor the never-ending carousel that is conference realignment. I had some good conversations with people over the weekend just trying to figure out where everything stands in this area and what comes next. And I'd love to give you some really great insight on exactly what's going to happen with the Big 12 and the teams around here. And the truth is, nobody knows. There are all kinds of possibilities, and you might see reports, and I'm not saying that any of those reports are wrong, because most of them are usually based in some truth on things that are being discussed. But things being discussed and things actually happening are two different things. So it's going to be a really interesting time, again, in college athletics. Before we take our first break, I do want to say something, and it's tough because I'm not even sure exactly what I want to say, but this past weekend was a tremendous weekend for me individually, for my family. We had a great weekend, and I hope if you're listening to this right now, you did too. I hope you got to go to some fun activities. I hope you got to spend some time with your family and the people that you love the most. I hope you got to eat a lot of great food. I hope you got to safely participate in fireworks at whatever level you want to be participating in those. And I hope you got to celebrate a wonderful holiday in the United States, a unique holiday to the United States. It is not lost on me while I was on scrolling through social media yesterday in my very peaceful, quiet, not quiet, it was loud, but it was peaceful and happy and friendly experiences through the weekend, that there's this backdrop of mass shootings in different parts of the country again. And seeing the video footage of people in Philadelphia fleeing a mass shooting while fireworks are going off, celebrating the 4th of July at the exact same time. Seeing video footage of children marching in a parade in a Chicago suburb while a mass shooting is taking place. Reading the stories of 6 different people being shot in Kansas City over the weekend, including right outside of T-Mobile Arena at a concert. There are so many things that make living in this country wonderful. I feel lucky all the time for where I was born, because I had nothing to do with that, and where I've been raised and where I've spent my entire life living. There are so many things that make this country a wonderful place to live and raise a family and do all the things that we do. And there are so many things that make this country special and unique. There's also something that makes this country unique that we live with now on a daily basis, and that is the constant threat of gun violence. And I'm not going to get into what needs to happen about it, how we fix it, if we ever will fix it or even try. That's for other shows. That's not for this. That's not what this is for. That's not what we're here for. But I don't think any of us, whatever you want to say about it, can deny that this is uniquely an American problem. And it happens now regularly to the point where you can't even, like, it, you, If you say a mass shooting on 4th of July, that isn't even specific enough because there's more than one in the same day. And it breaks my heart. It breaks my heart because I think that it just puts this cloud over all of the other things that I just mentioned that make it so great to be here. And I don't really even know what I have to say about it other than it just struck me as I was sitting there that we all know now that it could happen to any of us anywhere, right? We know that it could be at a high school, it could be at a grade school, it could be at a college campus. Those things have all happened. It could be at a movie theater, could be at a church, could be at a synagogue, could be at a parade, could be at a country concert, could be at a fireworks show, could be outside of a concert. It could be anywhere. There's no place where a madman with a gun might show up. And that is part of the reality that was on display on the day when we try to celebrate all the great things about America. And I just didn't feel like it would be appropriate to not say something about that to start a show today. Because to me, that is just such a big cloud hanging over us right now that it, even though we don't get into things like that here, it's hard to just completely ignore. On that note, we're going to talk sports the rest of the show today. My heart goes out to anybody who's been involved in any sort of gun violence or any other tragic situation over this past weekend. I feel incredibly grateful that I didn't have to deal with anything like that in my little circle of influence, that everything was peaceful around me, and the people that I was around were doing almost nothing but spreading love toward one another. I wish we could get back to a discourse in this country where we seem to be more civil to one another in general, and I hope we can do that. And that's it. We'll get back to baseball. We'll talk some Royals. We'll hear from Mike Matheny. We'll hear some participants that have thoughts on this conference realignment and much, much more as we continue. This is the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB, and we're on 38th The Spot. The Royals lose 7-6 after having a 5-0 lead over the Astros yesterday. Mike Matheny broke the loss down afterwards.
One of the tougher ones of the season. And Heasley comes out and responds after the offense comes out and gives us some room to work. And the guys were doing a great job early on of just keep putting the pressure on. And he's kept getting the shutdowns. Thought he threw as good as we've seen him throw. And then able to add that one late with MJ being able to tack that on to give us a little bit more of a lead. It's, like the chances of us being able to finish that off.
But they didn't finish it off. The bullpen was not good again yesterday, but Heasley was one of the positives, and Matheny said that the best thing he saw from Heasley was his ability to repeat his delivery.
Yeah, he did a great job of just limiting the damage at that point. Had the bases loaded, and Oliveris makes a nice play right and just kind of keeps it just to the one run. It's a great job in this ballpark. Thought he did a really good job all day long at just repeating. He had everything. The curveball was probably the best we've seen from him. Slider was good, got strikeouts with it, and, of course, changeup's good. But fastball command was there. He did both sides of work, both sides of the plate. It's kind of start. He's going to win more often than not. Gave us a chance to put us in perfect position to do so.
Basically, against that offense too. I mean, they're obviously dangerous. For him to work around, like you said, those jams and throw pretty much everything that he had mixed up well. How important was that for him?
Yeah, that's the advantage of having a four-pitch mix. I really didn't know what to sit on. You could see him speed him up a little bit, and then changeup became better. The breaking ball really was sharp, like I said, and I think that had him thinking a little bit too, especially when he got into advantage. advantage counts because it's a great chase pitch. But you know, he really was unpredictable all day long and executed when he needed to.
So those were the positives. Jonathan Heasley has a quality start. He goes six innings, gives up three hits, two runs, one earned, two walks, three strikeouts. But the bullpen comes in. Mills gives up two runs in an inning. Then Amir Garrett gives up two walks and a hit without recording a single out and ends up giving up two runs on his ledger as well. And Mike Matheny was asked what went wrong for Garrett in the eighth inning.
Yeah, you know, we know when he's in the zone, he gets outs, and just need, you know, right there. I know he's got a tough assignment. He's got two really good lefties, and need him to do what he does. He gets them, and we hand the ball over to Scott for the ninth.
Given how good Merritt is against lefties, how confident are you in him in that spot?
Yeah, we get to that spot right now. We need somebody to be able to walk through that eighth to be able to pass it on. And when you get two out of the three lefties in the way Amir's been throwing, you know, feel very confident that he's going to be able to get the job done. And I know we'll be confident he'll get a job done next time.
Well, Amir Garrett's got a 6.75 ERA right now. So he's not been getting the job done this year. It's been a rough year for him. He's hired a new pitching consulting group to work with, right? So
an independent party now.
Yeah. We'll see if that makes a difference. That doesn't seem like a ringing endorsement of Cal Eldred right there, the fact that he seems to feel the need to go outside of the organization to find somebody to help him. Whatever they're working on right now, it didn't help yesterday because he walked two guys. He gave up three base runners and didn't record a single out. Clark gets the blown save because he has to try to come in and clean up the damage. He gives up the hit that gives up the two runs to tie the game, and then Barlow gives up the walk-off home run in the ninth inning. And the Royals are now 2-2 on this road trip. They won the series in Detroit, and there were some bright spots there. Brady Singer, all kinds of strikeouts and a good outing over the weekend. But now they're taking on a Houston team that's really good. The Royals are 22-49. The Astros are 52-27. And they've got three more games with Houston on the road before they come back home this coming weekend. We'll take a break. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot.
Sunlight hurts my eyes, and something without warning love bears heavy on my mind.
So now we wait to see what dominoes fall when it comes to conference realignment. This will be a continuing story, we know, after the bombshell was dropped late last week, that USC and UCLA will be moving to the Big Ten. And now we wonder, does the Big 12 look to try to poach other teams from the Pac-12? Does the Pac-12 look to react to losing two of their biggest brands in the way that the Big 12 did, which was to go out and try to bring in other schools to replace them? It's all on the table, and geography does not matter. Right? We get that now. This, and maybe there were moves already in the Big 12, probably most specifically, that already indicated that geography doesn't really matter like it used to. I'm now old enough, Marco, to say back in my day, all the leagues kind of made sense. The Pac-12 was the Pac-12 because it was on the Pacific Ocean for the most part. It was a Western Coast League. The Big East. You know why it was called that?
What it was called back then?
Well, you know why it was called that?
Oh, the Big East? Because the biggest universities in the East Coast
They're on the East Coast, yeah. The ACC, do you know what that stands for?
The Atlantic Carolina Coast.
Coast Conference?
Yeah.
Atlantic Coast Conference.
Right.
It kind of tells you regionally where that league is based.
Right.
The SEC.
Southeast, yeah.
Yeah, the old Southwestern Conference. Even the Big Eight, it didn't describe where the Big Eight was, but you knew all these states right here in the middle.
Proximity was a big thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter anymore, right? And you could say that maybe the Big 12, even though they were kind of victims of the first round of Conference Armageddon, they were the ones that kind of made that part not matter, because it seemed like everything that the SEC did, like, okay, Missouri, they're a little further north, a little further west than the rest of the schools, but they connect. They connect to those states. They're connected to Arkansas, right?
Yep.
The Big Ten, yeah, they grew east. They grew eastward with that last round of expansion, but the states are connected still. And then the Big 12 said, West Virginia. That's where we're going. And I've said many times, you know, I've been the grumpy guy that doesn't like conference realignment and thinks it's been bad for college athletics overall. It's just gotten a lot of people richer. Some people richer. When I used to travel with the University of Kansas, anytime we were in Morgantown, West Virginia, I would always think to myself, what are we doing here? What are we doing here? There's nothing about West Virginia that feels like the Big 12 or the Big 8. Every other school up until this point is right here on that kind of I-35 corridor for the most part. And you feel like there is a geographical and cultural similarity between, you know, there's a lot of agricultural stuff around here. When you listen to the radio networks, you're going to hear a lot of farm commercials and small, these like small college towns and all that. And then all of a sudden you're in Morgantown, West Virginia, just in these mountains. You know, there's the guy that's got the musket, you know, and the mountaineer outfit on and everything. And what are we doing here? Well, so that maybe started a little bit the idea of, we don't care how far away it is. We'll travel. You know, West Virginia has to travel for every sport to the Midwest to play all their games. But this one seems to take it to an even more absurd level. Now, look, who's joining the Big 12 next? You know, Central Florida?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right. That's not really, there's nothing about geography there.
BYU.
Yeah. I mean,
school out in Utah.
Skipping a state over there, since Colorado's not here right now. Maybe they'll come back. Who knows? But this one with the Big Ten picking up the two Southern California schools, if there was any doubt whatsoever about whether or not location matters for leagues in college athletics, that's out the window. Right? So that puts everything on the table. So what happens next? Well, you got to consider all of it, right? Heather Dinich from ESPN talks about what she thinks will be the next dominoes to fall when it comes to conference realignment in the wake of the UCLA and USC decisions.
The larger impact here and the realistic impact is it lends further credence to discussions about football operating under its own umbrella and everyone else continuing to operate under the NCAA. I mean, look, at the end of the day, when Notre Dame and USC play football on a fall Saturday, that's still great football. I don't care what conference they're in. That's a rivalry, that's a tradition, and that's college football at its finest, right? And I think that product isn't going to change for college football fans.
I guess I'm just still fascinated at the whole concept of separating college football from everything else. And again, I'm curious, how does that come into play with Title IX? I was told by somebody what really makes Title IX a factor when it comes to college athletics is whether or not your organization accepts state and federal money. If it does, then it's got to comply with Title IX. So maybe college football separates itself entirely, really, like even from the universities almost. I mean, obviously, we've got, you know, a lot of these athletics departments have set up their own LLCs or whatever you call it, their own corporations. And maybe they just go, look, we fund ourselves. We don't accept any money. We're separate from the university. So we're not bound by the same rules. If this thing's going full-fledged pro, which is where everything's trending right now, and look, and I'm sorry, we can lament that all we want, but as soon as this stuff all became about the money, that's where this was going to head. You can't make moves like this all the time for the amount of money that we're talking and expect the people that are actually providing the talent to just not want any of that money. And that's just the way that's just kind of the way capitalism works, right? Like at some point, if people are making a ton of money, usually the people that are producing the goods go, hey, we want some of that, you know, and then there's a fight over it. Well, because then the organization says, well, you wouldn't get any of that if it wasn't for us, you know, and back and forth. And then all of a sudden, that's how collective bargaining agreements happen, you know. So is that where college football is headed? Away from the rest of college athletics? We shall see. Adam Rittenberg from ESPN was asked which move was more surprising, because obviously OU Texas caught us all off guard leaving the Big 12 when they got to basically rule the roost here forever. Now UCLA, USC leaving to go to a place that's just completely on the opposite side of the country from them. Which one was more surprising?
In some ways, you could say it's this move just because the Big Ten and the Pac-12 have been maybe more in lockstep than any other two conferences. They have, you know, a relationship with the Rose Bowl that goes back decades and decades. You know, they formed that alliance about a year ago last year to basically say we're not going to be poaching one another. And so, you know, because the Big 12 has had these periods where it seems like it's on life support and on the verge of collapsing, you can never be that surprised, especially when Texas is involved, of a possible move. And so I actually would say that this one, even though it came second, was more surprising than Texas and OU to the SEC.
So that's where we stand now, and we find out, I would assume it could be sometime relatively soon, is the Pac-12 going to look to expand? And is there a possibility that Big 12 schools will be taken away? Does the Big 12 strike first and grab some schools from the Pac-12? What happens next? We will wait and see. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot. I mentioned earlier the many things that make our country unique and special. One of them, our unparalleled ability to consume processed meats in high quantities. And the GOAT, when it comes to that, is Joey Chestnut, who is now the 15-time Nathan's hot dog eating champion. Did you see the footage, Marco, of what Joey Chestnut did this time around?
I saw the footage of what he did during the show. Yeah, during the contest.
As protesters came on stage with signs that said "Expose Smithfield Death Star," I believe, from what I understand, is a animal rights issue in. In Utah, this man had a Darth Vader mask on. If you watch the footage too, you'll see two other people in stormtrooper masks on the other side of the stage holding up the same sign. But the guy that runs in front of Joey Chestnut felt the wrath of the most prolific hot dog eater in American history, who got him in a rear naked choke and slammed him to the ground and then continued devouring hot dogs until he won the title. I mean, that's next level stuff. It's like, already the guy has proven time and time and time and time again that he is the greatest of all time. when it comes to consuming massive amounts of hot dogs in a short period of time. This time, he does it, stays focused, stays concentrated, and does not allow anything to get in his way as he chokeslams a man and then continues to really inspire the world with his greatness. And, you know, you don't mess around with a guy that's, you know, in front of a man that is, or a person, I should say, that is steamrolling toward greatness will not stop for anyone. That's what we found out yesterday from Joey Chestnut. So there you have it. That was maybe one of the more inspiring things I saw over the weekend. Also saw a lot of very overserved people at Kenny Chesney on Saturday night. Oh, boy.
One of them was an intern, Marissa, was it?
No, was Marissa there?
Oh, yeah. She said that she's still recovering from the Saturday night.
She's still recovering from Saturday night.
From Chesney, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, but that was a couple nights ago now. We had Sunday night. We had Monday night. Still recovering, huh? Boy. I'll tell you what, some of the people that were around us, I'm sure they're on a 3-day recovery as well, because we didn't make it for the opening acts. I'm going to give a shout out real quick. We went with another couple that we're friends with it was kind of a date night. So we decided to go to dinner at one of our favorite places, a place called Farina down in the Crossroads, which is a Michael Smith restaurant. Michael Smith is considered, my in-laws tell me everything I need to know about food, and they've always told me that Michael Smith is, in their mind, the best chef in Kansas City. And, of course, he has that little space there where it's Michael Smith and then Extra Virgin and then Farina. And Mr. Smith was walking around the restaurant saying hello to people, checking on their dinners, making sure everything was going well. And I introduced myself to him and said, hey, big fan. My wife and I have come here several times. We love your place. You know what he said? I listen to you guys every morning.
Oh, man.
So he might be listening right now. Michael Smith, if you're listening, shout out. It was an amazing experience, as always. Love that place. And he brought us out every dessert they made at Farina. And we didn't finish all of them, but we tried all of them. And we kept eating, and it was incredible. So I want to give a shit, because I was like, to me, I was a little starstruck, you know, and listening to his story and how he became one of the best chefs in the city, grew up with a single mom who worked in the restaurant industry for a big company that had restaurants all over the country. And every year he was living in a different town because they would send his mom into that town to fix that restaurant. So he really looked up to his mom. He loved the food industry. He studied it his whole life, and there he is. Kind of a cool story there. So shout out to Michael Smith. It was great to see him and find out that he listens to the Border Patrol on a regular basis. How cool is that? All right, we'll take a break. We got Jamie Bluma and a special, special guest in studio coming up in the next hour on Sports Radio 810 WHP, and we'll wrap things up on 38 The Spot.